Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm also your host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
Ben, how long has it been since we've recorded a show?
More than 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. It may not seem like that from the other side of the pod, but it's been a long time.
If we've done our jobs right, that should be imperceptible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's strange because I feel like some of the ones that we recorded in the mad rush to get enough coverage for my very long trip overseas, I feel like are some of our best.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we need schedule pressure clearly to do our best.
Yeah, otherwise our show is terrible.
I was thinking that it was also the longest layoff we've ever had since starting the show.
It's true.
Because even on my trip to Victorville, we managed to record pod while I was down there.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I was in a couple of countries that had incredibly poor internet, so it really wouldn't have been possible. And then, like, getting to watch episodes would have also been a challenge, so... I'm glad we did it the way we did, but man, I was fucking withdrawing. I hated not doing TGG.
I didn't like not doing the show, but I also had a weird, I really missed watching the show too, because I wasn't going to watch episodes unless we were going to record on them, so I took just as long of a break from watching as well. I missed it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really nice to sit back down and get back into watching eps.
I mean, while you were away, I just had to find my dick joke material elsewhere.
any hot tips?
That's the terminology you want to use, Ben?
I think I picked my words carefully, Adam.
Yeah, I think you did. Well, there's plenty to joke about in today's episode, Ben. Why don't we just get into that?
We could. Before we do, I have one little thing I wanted to take care of before we get in. I got a piece of mail here, and it's probably been sitting in my apartment for almost a month.
Oh, geez.
So
hopefully it's not food.
I thought I'd open it real quick and. Hey, if it's funny, whatever's inside, you're hearing this, and if not, it got cut from the show.
Let's do it.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
So it's kind of like a pizza box-looking box.
Oh, God, it is food.
Well, I mean, it's like the shape, but it definitely doesn't have like a portly Italian gentleman illustration on the front. This is from Navarro, and it went through the mothership at MaxFun HQ, who are kind enough to forward it on. So let me get into this. This is like, it's the most absurd box because it's a pizza box format, but huge, huge flaps on all four sides instead of just the one flap. I don't know what this is going to be.
It's a nice Oxford shirt.
Okay, so here's the note says, Adam and Ben, great show. Can't wait for DS9. Please enjoy this 24th century wallet, Nav. what this is, Adam, is a Umbra brand pendant scarf hanger. Oh man, that's pretty good. it's actually a fairly lovely object in and of itself, but yeah, it's meant for hanging scarves. I'm sure you're just raging with jealousy right now, Adam.
Nefaro, one of the great gifts, right there.
One of the best gifts.
Everybody talking about it.
Wow.
It's a very strange looking thing.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it'd be great for it. You know, maybe
24th century wallet.
Maybe on our upcoming tour, we'll have something that we can hang off of it and display in the merch booth.
I feel like in the present, we're all about reduction, right? Getting the skinny wallet. Getting a wallet maybe where it's just a couple of cards, or maybe a wallet that's clipped on the back of your phone.
In the 24th century, we've
blown it back up again. It's closet-sized wallet.
It hangs in your closet. It's more than a foot on three sides.
Wow. Fantastic.
Thank you so much, Navarro. What a thoughtful gift.
Incredible. Lucky you, Ben. And now you got to move that thing across country. That's great.
back to Los Angeles, where it was sent out from.
Wow. It's like that scarf rack is like one of those gnomes people travel with and take pictures of in like different cities around the world.
Yeah, in front of the big shiny bean in Chicago, in front of Big Ben in London.
Can never find that bean.
Yeah, who knows? That might be fictional.
All right, let's get to it, Ben. It's season 6, episode 5. Shishimsh.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
I'm going to be sad to see this one go because Kevin has made a number of appearances to say the name of it.
Yeah.
I like to check in with Kev. The entrepreneur is doing some charting, and Commander Riker is having a tough time getting restful sleep. And this is, I think the first thing we see after our captain's log is Riker, like, tossing and turning and then, you know, wandering around the ship doing his Rikerly duties with the conspicuously bad hair of a Riker in distress.
They really managed to squeeze in a lot of fun scene and character work before the theme song here. Like, you get to see a Federation clock radio. I thought that was fun. Yeah. Like, it's right up next to the vanity.
Yeah.
I really appreciate Riker's choice in pillows. It's not the squared-off pillow of a Geordi LaForge. It's a actual proper pillow.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's interesting that that there are options, you know? Because in a military context, you don't always have you don't always get to pick what cot you're sleeping on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Riker's not hot bunking it, for sure.
Right. Yeah. This is one of the nicer quarters on the ship.
I feel like if you're a writer on this show and you're tasked with, like, how do I visually show someone's faltering sanity, and everyone is supposed to be wearing more or less the same uniform, really, the hair's the only thing you can do, right? Like,
yeah,
that's the only thing you can work with, and luckily, Riker William T. has a particularly good canvas for this.
The only other thing I feel like you could do that would be fun, and I kind of feel like maybe a missed opportunity, is if he walked into a scene and his uniform was only zipped halfway up in the back. He's just showing some pasty back.
Do you think he has a lot of back hair?
Ooh, that's interesting. I kind of wonder if Riker William T. is a back waxer. Because, I mean, we know he's got... a great deal of chest hair because we see his deep V in this scene, and he's all man on in the front. But I feel like you know, he takes his bedroom time seriously enough that I feel like he might wax it up on the back and shoulders.
There's little doubt that the carpet touches the drapes in one long unbroken run.
Yeah, that would be a fun scene with the bully and barber doing the wax strips off the back.
If she starts doing his pubes, I'm out of here.
So Data and Geordi are working on a scheme to bump up how good the sensors on the ship are because they're charting some space, and I guess they want to be efficient about it. As they wrap up a little morning meeting about this, Data reminds Riker that he's got a
poetry reading this afternoon.
And the poetry reading winds up being the last 3 minutes of this 5-minute cold open. And, man, this is a scene, man. This is one of the scenes that people bring up when TNG comes up, I feel like.
It's hard on a, like, cringe per second basis to think of any other scene that rates as high as this.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, in its defense, it is a scene that is meant to induce cringe. You know, the idea is that it's so cringy, but I feel like you can do this scene without doing the scene.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't know.
We show Riker's face, cut to close-ups of a couple of the extras, you know, sticking their finger in their collar and going, yee. And I feel like we get the idea. Like, we have the idea 30 seconds into this scene, and it drags on for 3 minutes.
You know, what we're starting to get into more and more with these choices is, like, this is making it fun, in quotes, where I think it could be more interesting if there are some stakes. You know, like Riker being half asleep at the wheel could really have some consequences.
Yeah.
For a lot of people. And they don't go that route at all. It has more social consequences, at least initially.
Other thing worth pointing out in this scene is that Troy has a new wig, and it's a bad one.
It looks like, you know how sailors are just really good at rope work? Not talking about the kind that's being used, but like when
you're talking about marlin spiking.
I'm talking about like unused rope, like coiled up nicely.
Yeah.
Like hanging. That's what her hair looks like now.
Holy shit, is this Lieutenant Jay sitting next to Picard?
It sure is. And I had a question about this. Like, they are sitting very close.
Yeah, like, it kind of looks like they're touching on a date, close. Right?
Right. Are they on a date? Can we be sure that they're not? Because they are the only people who are sitting so close as to be basically leaning on each other.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Geordi and Worf are the next closest two people.
If the captain's going to be dating a crew person, man, like, they say, like, you should never date someone from the office, but, like, it doesn't get any closer in an office context than the driver of your ship.
Right.
Like, he couldn't find anyone who worked with Keiko or anything.
Right. It's definitely... It's also a weird episode because Picard's, like, not in it much until, like, the midpoint. Like, this is... I think this is only seen until, like, 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
So... You have to do a lot of headcanon to explain what the fuck is going on with this Lieutenant Jay appearance.
I don't feel like it's something that in modern television you could get away with, because people would see that right away and think that they were setting the table for something to come later.
Yeah, but it's on Chekhov's gun. Like, everything in modern television is Chekhov's gun.
And nothing in Star Trek The Next Generation is. Which is why, as I saw it, I was like, well, yeah, like, they're never going to pay this off, and they don't.
Yeah. This scene ends, and it throws to title sequence, and it's...
off of a fade.
Yeah, it fades to title sequence.
I nonetheless consider you a true and valued friend.
It is the most cold of cold opens. Like, it is, it doesn't set any suspenseful action in motion. It doesn't challenge, you know, like, pose some challenging idea. It doesn't, there's no inciting incident of any kind. It's just 5 minutes of Riker being sleepy and Data being cringy.
If the design of a cold open is meant to hook, there are no hooks here. It's a drinking straw.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it is sort of the Times Arrow of cold opens, right? It's like, might as well not bother coming back after the summer, because we don't have much.
This is a season that is not gathering strength as it goes.
I mean, it's funny because, like, I think that there's a lot of really cool stuff in this episode, and it's so baffling that they let this be the way it opens.
Right, especially because towards the climax, they're really cramming stuff in.
Right, they're like, we don't have enough room.
Yeah, there's so much runway before the theme. Like, use it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like an acting difficulty akin to acting drunk to act tired, I think, and not be super ham and cheese about it.
Yeah.
I thought Frakes did a pretty good job throughout this episode of, like, being demonstrably tired but not cartoonish about it.
Yeah, that was...
He really looks like he's in pain, and I think that's part of it. Like, he does not play up the yawning and the stretching as much as he's, like, frustrated and... And I think we've all been there when we've experienced insomnia. Like, it's so not fun or funny. It's just, like, painful in many ways. And that's the direction he goes with it, with the performance.
Yeah, as someone who's been dealing with jet lag quite a lot for the last several weeks, one thing that has been a struggle for me is, like, I feel like I need people to know how impaired I am, but I don't look that impaired.
It's important to set people's expectations up front.
Right. which is why this is going to be a terrible episode of The Greatest Generation. So we come back, and I think he's, like, getting some six-bay action. The doctor suggests that maybe he's not getting enough REM sleep, which is like, come on, doctor, that was a different episode.
Ben, if you went to a 24th century six-bay... And Dr. Crusher was there prescribing a cure for insomnia. And it was...
A recipe for a warm milk toddy.
How pissed would you be?
Probably about as pissed as Riker seems.
A hot milk toddy?
What the fuck, man? This is an incredibly imperfect future if they haven't solved for this yet.
Yeah. Doesn't Pulaski prescribe chicken soup to somebody at some point?
Yeah. Seriously, go to hell. Why am I even in here?
Yeah.
I wonder how capable the replicator is for stuff like that. Like, can you order something from the replicator, like, contextually? Like, hey, can you give me something for sleep? Or my tum-tum's not feeling good. give me a lunch that'll go easy on it. And, like, it would provide something like that. Because it seems like you could get the doctor completely out of it if you could order something that way.
Yeah, I mean, and if there isn't medicine, there is just... you know, a dab of brandy and some warm milk. Like, kick Ogawa off the ship, kick Crusher off the ship, kick the other background doctors with the front sips off the ship. We don't need them.
Yeah, just a replicator with updated software, and we're good to go.
So Data and Geordi and some other... engineers are hanging out in Shimoda Corner. They get the they're like patching the warp engines into the sensor array so that the sensors can be super powerful, and they get it going. They're really pleased, and then
I am reading a massive EPS explosion
in one of the cargo bays, and the ship says that there's people working up in that cargo bay, so they're pretty concerned about it. And
they leave the jumper cables attached between the sensors and the warp engines, though, which I think is fucking great. Like, a huge explosion has happened a moment after connecting the two, and they're like, well, they can't be related. Like, let's go triage the explosion.
Yeah, let's Let's go check the power line that just blew out.
Yeah.
So they call for damage control and a medical emergency team to go up to the cargo bay. And damage control is Worf and a buddy, apparently. They all get up to the door of the cargo bay, and they've got readings from the other side of the door with a tricorder that makes it seem like it may be somewhat dangerous. So,
no one thinks to put the back of their hand up to it, though.
Yeah, well, they say stand clear, and everybody but Data stands clear. It's the most suicidal suicidal thing he's done this season.
Prepare for shrapnel. I'll make sure I take it off for you.
Yeah, yeah. He's like the goalie, shrapnel, the shrapnel wall. And the door's open, and it's a great, like, shot, reverse shot of them walking in, and then, like, guys in Shimoda costumes, like,
is there something wrong, sir?
That warning's so great. They're like, before we go in there, prepare yourselves. It's going to be like Omaha Beach, like, just a fucking bloodbath. Like, yeah. Like we might want to just put a bunch of kitty litter outside the door for absorbency.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's going to be gross.
Yeah. It's like three guys carrying a keg. Yeah. They like look like they're headed to a frat party, like a yeah. Shimoda themed frat party.
That would be our theme for our frat party.
I feel like the only thing that I feel like I really am married to for Greatest Gen Con is a Shimoda themed party.
The thing about the Shimoda themed party is that you're going to end up on the floor one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Stack in your vomit.
Ew. But it's fun. It's like it's a big like wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, and, false alarm. Ben, I think they just got shishumed. I'm gonna play the Ice-T from Law and Order role in this episode. Uh-huh. Every time there's a moment of shishum, I'm going to call it like I see it.
Oh, I appreciate that. I mean, it's appropriate because we know that Ice loves Coco, and Tracy Coco is prominently featured earlier in this episode. So, you know, I see that as being a great choice on your part.
It's this new Federation drug that combines warp core power and the sensor array. Kids in the cargo bay call it schisms.
Did I ever tell you about the time I saw Ice-T on the street?
No, but it seems like if you're in New York, it's going to happen all the time, right?
It's only happened once, but it was great. I was looking in the window of a shop on 8th Street, kind of close to NYU, and I saw him like reflected in the window, and so I turned around, and it was definitely him, and so I was really excited. And I you know, it was probably like the first like real exciting celebrity I ever saw in New York, because I was fairly new to town.
That and, qualifies.
Creepster that I am, I decided to like amble down the block about, you know, four car lengths behind him just to see where he went. And where he went was the Dashing Diva Nail Salon. And I was like, what? What is going on? And then I looked in the window of the Dashing Diva Nail Salon, and there was Coco.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was so great. You got two run-ins.
Mm-hmm. I later got to meet him at Max Fun HQ because Jesse interviewed him for Bullseye.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And did you bring up that moment? You know, I actually ran into you before. I tailed you for about four blocks.
Yeah.
And followed you into a nail salon.
I used some police tailing techniques that I learned from your popular television program.
Yeah. You got to believe if Ice-T does not want to be tailed, he wouldn't be tailed.
What a career that guy's had. Went from actual bank robber to famous musician with a notorious song called Cop Killer to most famous for playing a cop on TV.
He's got some munch longevity, doesn't he?
Yeah. Pretty good stuff. I wish he would do the munch thing and show up in other shows in his character.
Yeah. That'd be great.
That'd be fun. Fuck the Munchiverse. I want the T-iverse.
Yeah. I mean, I love Munch.
Is Trek is in the Munchiverse, right?
I think it is.
Yeah.
It is a guiding principle of a Darth Vader base. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
After all the excitement with nothing happening in the cargo bay, Riker and Geordi are like winding their day up, and they're like heading home, walking through the hallways. Riker's like, "Hey, bud, I got a favor to ask. I've been having a devil of a time getting up in the morning. I'm just not getting good sleep. If you could come by at like 7 a.m., wake me up, I would really appreciate it." And Geordi's like, "Hey, no problem." And Riker goes into his quarters, makes himself a toddy, has a sip of it, lays down on his bed, and the doorbell rings. And it's Geordi, and Geordi's like,
"Good morning.
Time for work."
"Morning, I just went to bed."
The read on Riker at this point is as much devastation as it is fatigue. He's yeah. like, "Oh God, no, no, not again."
This was a real missed opportunity from a figuring out what's going on standpoint, because they've got that hot toddy there.
A hot milk toddy.
And nobody ever checks it for what temperature it is.
Yeah.
You know, because like, this is a universe where a lot of things could potentially be happening. There could be a stitch in time where he's jumping forward himself, or the ship is jumping forward, but other objects aren't. You know, like, I feel like knowing whether the toddy had cooled off to room temp would have been a good data point for them to carry forward.
When you go to sleep and you think you're getting 8 hours, but then your buddy wakes you up for work just a moment later, Ben, you just got schismed.
Ben, it's fun hearing you bend yourself into the ability to do a on-the-fly transition to Uxbridge.
What's going to be fun is to know if any of this stays, or if it's a bit that just dies in the edit. At this point, it's a total coin flip.
Yeah. Well, speaking of dashing divas, Worf is getting a haircut from the Bolian barber. Did they recast this barber, or is it the same guy?
I think it's the same guy. I have so many questions about Klingon hair care, though.
Persistent, itchy, flaky scalp.
Like, on a Klingon ship, do you cut your own hair? You have to, right?
Worf definitely rocks a different look from most Klingons. Like, it may be the same hair, but he's definitely using different product.
Neutrogena T-Gel. It works.
Because they're usually, like, pretty, like, wavy, and, you know, they're not necessarily dragging a comb through it all the time. And Worf has such an anal retentive hair swagger.
Yeah, it is really, there are no flyaways or split ends for sure.
No, yeah. Yeah, he's running a tight ship. And
you never see him sleeping, do you?
Yeah, only cowards sleep at him.
He sleeps standing up in his weird balls chair.
Well, Mott is going in for the to give Worf some bangs, maybe, and Worf grabs the wrist on the hand that's holding the scissors, and he really like has to freak out looking at these scissors, man.
Real talk, Ben.
Yeah, real talk.
What do you think are the chances, 300 to 400 years in the future, that there will be scissors, like, period?
I don't know, man. I mean, I guess the premise of your question is basically, is there some sort of ray that can accurately cut hair better than scissors? I guess lasers can cut things, right?
We've seen people use lasers and light guns and stuff in this very barbershop.
Yeah, didn't Geordi shave with a light-based tool sometime?
He did. He did. So what is it about Klingon hair that requires scissors? Maybe it's Worf's preference, because that's the most rugged way to cut hair.
It would have been fun to see Mr. Mott pour some poison over the blades of the scissors just to like up the ante a little bit. Like, if I nick you with these, you're dead. So
I love like the stakes raising to every little bit of either self-care or domesticity from Worf has got to be like extremely dangerous.
Yeah, he pours a bunch of like hydrofluoric acid in the sink when he's going to do the dishes, so that if anything splashes up over the top of his dish doing gloves, the skin will melt off of his hands.
His toilet brush is a blowfish.
Yeah, he has spikes on either side of his bed, so if he rolls out of bed in the middle of the night, dead meat.
Man. Worf, what's great about this sort of headcanon is like Worf makes regular life so difficult that his security job just doesn't hold his attention at all, which it clearly doesn't.
Yeah.
It actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Would you say that Worf got shizhimed here, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, when Worf gets into the barber's chair and he's thinking it's going to be a relaxing hang with the talkative barber, and instead he sees pretty angsty PTSD-style scissor blades, you could say that Worf in this case has been shizhimed. You got shizhimed, Worf! And then, like, a bunch of people jump out from the side, like, woo! You should have seen the look on your face!
Yeah, a punk-style, like, post-TGG reality show.
Yeah.
Shizhimed. And it's a shizhim apostrophe D, right?
I'm a man of very special sense of humor. Especially hidden camera humor, particularly.
You thought you were being pulled over in a typical moving violation road stop, but what's really happening is a stripper is portraying the part of a cop.
And also, I've exterminated your entire race.
You just got shizhimed.
It turns out the Hoosnock genocide was just a part of his prank show pilot that never got picked up. He didn't want to tell anyone about the pilot because it was too shameful.
You thought somebody in the restaurant next to you was saying outrageously racist things and acting like you were their friend? You just got shizhimed.
So yeah, a bunch of stuff happens where different characters are having different unexplainable events, and it winds up with Troy pulling together like a group therapy sesh.
Issue one.
You know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest style. They all sit in a circle and talk about their experience, and they're all kind of like converging on describing a vaguely remembered place and experience that they all have some kind of corroborative details of. And this leads them to a scene in the holodeck where they're kind of standing around suggesting some scenery to the computer, and you know, different things appear, and they kind of zero in on a scene that they've all been a part of. And this is like just a great, great scene, in my opinion.
This was so effective. It felt like it came from a completely different episode.
Yeah, it is riveting. I mean, it starts with them just saying like, okay, like put a table in the middle of the room. And you get like the like most platonic ideal wood dinner table. And then they lower it, and then they like lift up one end, and it gets to like nightmare dentist chair eventually.
Yeah,
but it's so cool to see them kind of like puzzle through, like, oh no, it like had a, there was like an instrument panel on this part. No, oh yeah, my feet were restrained.
They do that thing where they raise tension through the, like, everyone in the room offers another bit to the puzzle and then they add those bits at an increasing frequency and rate.
Yeah.
Until in totality, they build the thing that they've all experienced in both, you know, a visual fashion and a like a sensory fashion. Like they're even messing with light sources and sounds in the room and stuff.
Yeah. I like that when Troy said, were there any smells? Yeah. Everybody's like, no, not really.
Yeah. And by the end, they give you like the wide shot of this giant dark room with the small table in the middle and them surrounding it. It is the spiritual opposite of the scene before the theme.
Yeah.
In this episode. It's great.
It's shot from a really fun angle, like the like over the top holodeck shot. I think that a lot of the time the holodeck is just like a comp, you know, or you know, they just kind of toss some yellow and black into the background, but they bring in a couple of flats and just let you kind of fill in that it's an entire room. I don't think that we get to see like the whole damn room that much, and it's cool.
Yeah, it is.
It's such a simple set. It's probably like the cheapest set that they ever have to put up, but like they definitely went with a way more complicated look for holodecks in like the movies and subsequent television shows. I think this is so great. It's all it needs to be.
In some ways, they're turning the holodeck into a CSI lab, which is sort of its perfect use.
Yeah.
That they use it for so rarely in a professional context.
Totally. Yeah, it's there's a couple of comparable things. Like, I think when Lal picks what she's going to look like in the Data Has a Baby episode, it's kind of a similar idea, but this definitely makes me want more of this. Like, I wish more often they were. And I mean, like the scene in the Geordi turns into a invisible alien episode where he's kind of doing forensics with the holodeck is also super cool.
Yeah.
Like, why do we get Lwaxana all the time and we get this like three times in the entire series?
Because Lwaxana is cheaper than doing a bunch of digital comps. That's why.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurses the disease.
So this combined with the, like, there's like a, some kind of subspace rift forming in the cargo bay where they had the fake explosion, leads them to start to piece together that they've been getting like abducted, like the way Greys abduct, you know, rural farmers in our time. And so like when Riker feels like he hasn't slept, it's because he's been in this alternate dimension getting anal probed. And they discover that like his arm got chopped off and then reattached at some point. Like it's freaky stuff.
Yeah, it's not enough that they've been leaving the ship, but some of the details of what's been happening to them while they've been gone are really terrifying.
Yeah.
Especially the arm thing. Like, imagine the places that arm has been.
Yeah.
All the way up to the forearm too.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, when we form the fingers into a fist, this can be inserted into almost any body cavity.
We've swabbed the forearm, and there are 3,700 different kinds of DNA on it. And that's up to the elbow.
Yeah. So, yeah, they come up with a plan where Riker's going to have he's going to get a stimulant injected into him. And he's going to go through the space-time butthole into the alternate dimension and maintain his consciousness. So they they tuck him into bed with like a tricorder and a sensor pack and a dustbuster, and he flies through and he is in this like freaky ass alien laboratory. And the table he's on is like not precisely what's been worked out in the holodeck, but like you see why the thing from the holodeck is what they settled on.
Yeah, pretty close. And he sees the helmsman on the other table.
Yeah.
And she's got like some tubes hanging out of her arm. They seem to be really interested in the arms.
Yeah, she's got like Borg tubes, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought they looked like too.
These aliens are freaky.
They're a little fishy looking, and they're clicking around with sort of like lobster claw hands.
They have the lobsteriest claws we've seen yet.
They don't look very dexterous to be performing any sort of surgery, you know?
Yeah. They must rely on the instruments for that.
Yeah.
But they all have hoods. Like, this is better alien design than we get a lot of the time.
I don't know if I agree with you there, because you mentioned something a few episodes back about writing without conviction and that being a real downfall to a lot of these episodes. Like, I feel like in alien design, especially, strong conviction can mean some really interesting results.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you shroud the alien in a dark hood and make them barely recognizable, I think that might lack the sort of conviction that I would want from some alien design. So I was a little bit uninterested in what they did with these people.
I see your point.
Like,
the place
is more interesting to me than the aliens themselves.
There was something that I kept thinking about when I was watching this scene, which was that I feel like it was a lot darker when I first saw it. Like, I don't feel like you saw as much of them, and I feel like that was maybe somebody can do some research on this and tell us, but I feel like part of what was so scary about it is that you couldn't really see beyond the edge of the table, and in this it's like kind of like they got a lot of detail out of the darks in transferring this to HD, and I wonder if that was kind of a aesthetic mistake that they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
The scene is freaky. You know, Riker has to like pretend to be asleep while they're looking him over, and then he sort of surreptitiously sneaks out of bed and grabs the helmsman, licks a shot at one of the aliens with his dustbuster, and manages to jump through the space butthole like just in the nick of time, because to raise the stakes, they've decided that they need to close that hole up.
He really gets a good action scene set piece moment here. Like,
yeah.
Riker grabs the crewman, like Hero carries her to the door, like shoots some people with a phaser. He's
flying
like
flying leap through the hole.
Y'all just got schismed. And then he's through the hole.
Schism this.
Yeah.
The ensign does a fun little hand move with her tubed up arm.
Yeah.
And then kind of a fucked out idea now, which is ball of light that was the alien invading their ship swirls around the room and then like flies through a bulkhead and out into space.
Yeah, and like the whole deal with them is that they are from a different universe. Like that runs on a totally different frequency from this universe.
Right. They were
and so what these other scientists were trying to do was like, well, we can't study you by going to your universe, so we're going to grab a couple of you guys, set you up in a fish tank over here, and then do our weird science on you that way. But it appeared as though the thing, like the weird staticky thing on the panel inside the cargo bay, was their attempt to create a portal into their world that they could use as a place to exist.
Mm-hmm. It was,
but there's
attempt.
A much darker like line to the whole thing too, because as they're post gaming the mission, they're like, you know, we can't be sure that these people aren't malevolent about this either.
Whoever it was sent that thing was more than simply curious.
This scene ends with the same kind of tone as like a terrible movie that the studio obviously thought was going to have a sequel before they released it. You know,
it ends the way Conspiracy did, which is like, oh, we don't know where they are. They're probably going to return. And then what's going to happen? I don't know. But you already tried that with Conspiracy and you didn't pay it off at all.
Weren't people saying that the nubbins and Conspiracy just didn't work out. So they knew that they were going to have some evil existential threat, and they decided to make it the Borgs instead.
How could the Nubbins not work? The Nubbins worked great.
I agree. I'm just saying.
I'm pro Nubbin.
I'm just saying, like, that's what the showrunner class thought at the time.
I will vote Nubbin all the way down.
In the Borgs versus Nubbin political contest, you vote Nubbin?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to see that bumper sticker.
Got the bumper sticker and everything.
Is it Nubbin Remick 1988?
Well, you got one of those names right. It's Quinn Remick is what it is. When you want your politics delivered to your face, roundhouse style. I'm going to gut these regressive taxes, roundhouse style.
Oh, man.
I'm going to combat homelessness by throwing it through a glass table. I'm going to feed the poor with a healthy bowl of mealworms.
I'm going to improve education by giving a trapper keeper to all children.
That's great. That's pretty much the policy
yeah.
for the Nubbin campaign.
Friends don't let friends vote Nubbin at him.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
Did you like this one?
I mean, I liked the one scene. The one scene is the only reason to watch this episode. I mean, unless you like...
I think that the
unless you like
scene at
increasingly
the end is,
unhinged Riker, which is a version of him that I really like a lot.
Yeah.
They sort of fuck with Riker, don't they? They give Troy the love stories, and they give Riker the stories where he has to question his sanity.
I said, shut up!
And they give Worf the stories about learning how to be a better father.
It would be strange and fun to see them sort of turn that character wheel one click to the right and then realign all those things to different characters.
I agree. I think that what this episode gets right is the holodeck scene and the scene where Riker wakes up in the lab at the end. I think what it gets wrong is the entire first 20 minutes and several scenes after the holodeck scene also.
Yeah, it's like a story economy and how it's laid out.
Yeah. What if there was more that had to be done in the other universe? Like, what if they had to, like, shut down the way they were accessing our universe to make sure that they never could or something like that?
Yeah, it's the whole drop the bomb down the well solution, you know? Like, do they, instead of sending Riker back with a phaser, do they send him back with something more rugged?
Yeah.
Like he sleeps in a torpedo. Very vampiric by Riker.
Mm-hmm.
Picard has a moment toward the end where he gets to sort of give Riker some of his own medicine because he has the choice here. There's sort of a countdown at the end of they can shut down the portal from their end, thus leaving Riker trapped on the other side. And it really comes down to it whether or not Picard's going to do this. He can finally get rid of his Riker problem. Once and for all.
Yeah. Nid's been nipping at his heels for far too long.
Throw away all that HR paperwork finally. Blow it out the door. Blow it up. Did you like this episode?
It's fun enough toward the end that it kind of redeemed itself, but yeah, it was definitely a slog at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. From this dimension or any other, Ben, do we have any Priority One messages?
I believe we do, Adam. You want to check those out?
Yeah.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is for Pamexander Pamilton of the clan Pam!
is it, Adam?
And the message is from the walrus that barks at midnight. Message goes like this. Dearest Pam, Pam should always be read as a shout. Okay, I guess I need to start all over. Dearest Pam! It is your birthday, and I thought, what more would Pam fucking want than a goddamn message on this fucking stupid podcast I now love thanks to Pam? Pam it, Pam! I'm so far behind, I won't even fucking hear this message for months! Pam, you are the drunk Shimoda of my existential crisis.
Wow.
That would really ask me to be very specific with my line reading.
Yeah, your performance, it's like a Riley in a script where the writer is trying to direct you from behind the typewriter.
Yeah.
Not typically the right way to do things, but I feel like it kind of worked in this context.
I don't know, Walrus Barks at Midnight. I'd really like another shot at that. I mean, maybe we can do one for me.
Put your own stank on it.
No, I guess not. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have time.
I only get one go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The folks at MaxFun.org will be very cross with us if we read somebody's priority one more than the contractually obligated one time on the show. We do have another P1 here, Adam. It's from Plevim, and it's to Raz. Plevim and Raz have got to be stopped.
I really, what we don't get to see, just a glimpse behind the pod a little bit. What we don't get is the actual time in which these messages are sent. Like, they come in sort of like an automated style from the network. But I want to know is, if these Raz and Plevim messages are coming in at, 2:48 in the morning. 3:52 a.m.
Yeah, they're sitting next to each other at the bar.
Yeah.
Firing $100 messages back and forth at each other.
Yeah, using their poker winnings on P1s.
Some casinos will let you have a free P1 if you play at the higher stakes tables.
That's true. Yeah, a free buffet ticket and a P1.
So the message from Plevim to Raz goes like this: tell Raz that he can go fuck himself.
You know what's great about this message? Well, a lot of things are great about this message, Ben. But one of them is that Plevim does not capitalize Raz and does not end the sentence with punctuation. It feels like it was very urgently sent.
Yeah. The other great thing is that he spent $12.50 per word.
That's value. That's the greatest gen value. Wow. Sort of a couple of messages there that couldn't be more different.
Yeah.
Well, if you have a message that is like either one of those or completely different, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where you can craft something custom made, tailor suited to your messaging needs, and we'll read it on the air. Personal messages are $100. Commercial messages are for $200, and they help the ongoing production of this fine podcast program.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I mean, it was kind of a hard episode for me to find a Shimoda in, but I did get a nice laugh out of a lady that is at Data's poetry reading. And the camera lingers on this lady for kind of a long time in a way that made me think she was going to have a part. And I think part of the reason that she's getting the Shimoda is that she does not have a part. They just needed more people to look awkward and weird while Data was doing his poem. But she just looks like the kind of 90s mom who you'd go over to your friend's house and you'd say, damn, and you'd get in a hot mess of trouble because they don't allow swearing in their house.
Yeah.
So she gets my Shimoda for that thing I am projecting onto her, and also the fact that she got a ton of screen time for a character that has no lines.
I feel like most of the time the Shimoda is a projection of what we're feeling or what we've gone through at some point.
Yeah, yeah. How about yourself? Did you have a Shimoda?
From the same scene, the poetry reading, Khaki Pants Guy is in the background.
Oh, he totally is.
He's over Data's shoulder, and what he's doing is like making the faces that the viewer is making while listening to the poetry. He's sort of the viewer proxy.
Yeah.
He's back there in soft focus, kind of like... He looks like he's by himself, so I can imagine him, like, no one can stand being around him. He's like smirking and shaking his head, like, what the fuck is this? Huh? Yeah, trying to make eye contact with people around the room, and no one wants to look at him.
Khaki Pants Guy is accustomed to the poetry reading room being, you know, unused most of the time, so he was coming by to have a nice little solo sesh. The door opens, and he doesn't want to back out immediately, so... He tries to play it off and cannot keep a poker face while this poem is going down.
He's like the open mic host that has to be high energy, you know? Like, everybody give it up for Data!
All right, cats, yeah. You know, yeah. I used to have a cat, and then he does a little, like, chambered bit that he came up with in the 5 minutes before he had to run back on.
Keep the applause going for Jay!
Coming up next, very funny android has had appearances on Leno, Letterman, and Fallon. And
I recently started going to open mics again, Ben, and the closest open mic to my house, they're doing 2 minute sets.
Whoa.
Which is something that I have not seen too much of, and the open mic MC is just like, cannot sit down. Like, as soon as her ass hits the seat, it's back up again. The set's over. Like, it's totally frenetic and crazy.
Is this all comedy, or is it like a, you know, bring your acoustic guitar up or
no,
bring
this
a poem?
This is comedy at a club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been to very few of those, but I typically hate them because so many people that don't have any business doing comedy are up there doing... horrible humor.
Doing their approximation of what comedy is. Yeah. It's pretty breathtaking. Yeah. That part hasn't changed, Ben, I can assure you.
They just got schismed.
Yarmouk and Jalad at Tanagra.
Mother's Day. Many people... we'll tell you it's not a competition. I'm here to tell you it is. Win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in your family by giving your mom an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She's going to be looking back on your childhood memories and seeing what you're up to today. Whenever you take a new pic, it's really easy with the Aura Frames app on your phone to just add a picture to mom's new frame. It has been a great big hit in my family, and I think it'll be a great big hit in yours. Right now, Aura has a great sale going on for Mother's Day. Listeners save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and use code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. I've dedicated my life to something. Keeping sharp, dangerous things away from my junk. And this is a great thing to dedicate one's life to. However, it has one drawback. It makes it hard to look your best downstairs. Well, this episode is brought to you in part by the spring cleaning champions at Manscaped. And they have a Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra that has two interchangeable skin-safe blades. A standard one for taking a little off the top and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. But this is safe and is not going to give you cuts or nicks. It's the best of both worlds. You look all clean and nice down there, and you've kept sharp things away from your sensitive stuff. They also make stuff for above the waist, like their Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. And whatever you want, you can get 20% off and free shipping
with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with our code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your old pantaloons.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 6, episode 6, True Q. When an honor student in the medical field is assigned to the entrepreneur in an internship manner, begins to demonstrate powers of the Q, prompting you-know-who to show up. I promise you that that is something I pulled off of a real website and not a joke description.
I remember this as being one of the good Q episodes, Ben.
I feel like this capsule is maybe written by somebody who's at Amazon Instant in an internship manner.
Yeah, no one's going to proofread these. You're rated on quantity, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. If only they had bylines so we could make them famous here on The Greatest Gen.
Well, we have vetoes, Ben. You don't like Q. Are you thinking about it?
I don't like Q. I feel like I might give this one a veto reprieve because I remember really being sweet on the internship manner medical student.
Oh,
when
yeah.
When I was a young lad.
Yeah.
I remember finding her quite fetching.
Mm.
And I would hate to pass up an opportunity to look at an attractive lady.
I will certainly not veto this episode, Ben.
Okay.
I'm ready and willing to watch it, especially now that you've sold me on the potential for some nice eye candy.
Yeah. So episode safe, and we'll see if my memory serves or has done us a great disservice. There's always a potential with a Q episode.
Well, one thing that has always served us well from the start, Ben, has never done us a disservice, has been our growing legion of viewers.
Yeah.
They found us, Ben. They found us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime. You, of course, are there as @BenjaminR, AHR.
Yeah, as while we're talking about viewers, I wanted to give a shout to Mike and Aaron, Mike of Reddit and Aaron of the Facebook group, who built those groups with their bare hands, basically. They were fans of the podcast and decided to like make social spaces for people to talk about the podcast on Reddit and Facebook. And I really appreciate the fact that they did that and continue to shepherd those communities like actively. You know, they're making sure that it's a nice, welcoming place for everybody to be, and that's a lot of hard work, and I feel like we don't acknowledge it often enough.
That is a great point, and I completely agree. For a variety of reasons, you and I cannot be on those pages as often as maybe we'd like to be, even, and where there have been instances of drama or conflict, Mike and Aaron have been like totally on the spot, making sure that they continue to be nice places to talk and gab. So
yeah, and not turn into the like toilets that so many internet communities turn into.
Right, exactly.
They're not the receptacles for our viewers' darkest impulses.
Every time someone says something to me about like, wow, that's so awesome that there's like online communities based on the show you do, I'm like, yeah, it wasn't us. like we've got some really great viewers out there who have put these things together. So thank you.
Thanks, guys. So those are the Reddit and the Facebook. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music, and we should thank Adam Ragusea for our other theme music that are the themes of sub-segments within the show. And thanks to all of you guys. And, you know, Raz and Plavim, we probably thank for...
Probably want to start putting them at the end of the show, too.
With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and an episode of The Greatest Generation that we will record in a semi-professional manner.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.